We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, what is going on, everybody? How you doing? Welcome to a bonus Monday episode of Talking Buffalo Podcast, part of the Blue Wire Network. I am your host, Patrick Moran. Thank you very much, as always, for locking in today. Usually I say whether it's on the audio side or the visual side on video, YouTube, but this is going to be an audio-only episode. So again, you can catch this on Apple or Spotify or pretty much anywhere that you get the audio versions of podcasts. Hope you guys are doing well. It was an excellent, elite Buffalo weekend. Again, great weather. I mean, this has been an absolutely fantastic summer here in Buffalo so far. Not a lot of summer left, but it's been very enjoyable. The weather's been really good, man. There's been very few days where rain ruined anything or wind or nasty storms. It seems like all the rainstorms have been coming late at night when people are in bed anyway. So it's just been awesome here in Buffalo this summer. Again, a Monday bonus episode. Usually I don't have episodes on Monday. I'm doing this solo today. This will not be a long episode at all by any means. Coming up tomorrow on Tuesday's normal Tuesday Talk Buffalo podcast slot, I'm going to have my buddy Joe Miller. Joe Miller, of course, voice of the Overreaction Sports podcast, part of the Buffalo Rumblings vidcasting network. I almost want to say podcasting, but they do a lot of live video streaming stuff. So anyway, Joe Miller is going to be on with me tomorrow, and we're going to elaborate on the Buffalo Bills, whether it's been through training camp or their first preseason game this past weekend against the Indianapolis Colts. We'll get into some things a little more in depth, as opposed to today where I just got some quick thoughts on a handful of players based on what I saw from the game this weekend. So I'll just drop a couple thoughts on that. What else we got going on? Oh, and then, so last week I did my, I released it in written format, and then I did a podcast as well. I did my 2022 chicken wing ranking / tiers. And I had Nate Geary on from WGR last week, and we dedicated pretty much the entire podcast episode to talking about that. I kind of want to review and go over a couple things that I really didn't get a chance to say while I was doing the show with Nate last week. And also, as it got down near the end, the nitty gritty, when we got to the Elite and then finally the Mount Rushmore, started having some audio problems and video problems as well with the podcast. So at that point, I was trying to get through it real quick. So I kind of skipped over some things. But anyway, I got a little more, anyway, detailed, in-depth thoughts on those. And I'll tell you this, it's funny in a way. I mean, I'm laughing. It is kind of funny. But I probably at this point get more questions asked about wing spots to go, or, you know, what I think about this place or that place. And the other thing, I probably get more with chicken wings now that I do with sports, which I don't know. I guess I should find that kind of flattering. But anyway, like I said, I got a couple thoughts that I want to share that I really didn't get a chance to get into when I was doing the show with Nate, especially the Mount Rushmore. I mean, that part was literally rushed at the very end because, like I said, I started seeing audio issues and I just wanted to get through that. I have a new number one. Nate didn't really agree with that. So I'm going to explain that as well. So all that's coming up today. Like I said, kind of a condensed episode. Joe Miller tomorrow. And speaking of Joe, I want to say this too. So I went to a Bills Mafia party on Sunday, yesterday. And it was called Fenafest. It was hosted by a guy. He's on Twitter. He's Buffalo Freddy on Twitter. His name is Dan Freddy. Great guy. I never met him until Sunday. But anyway, he had a home. He's got a home in Lancaster. And I mean, he really went all out. He pulled out all the stops, man. There were bounce houses, a dunk tank. He's got a pool. Just loads and loads of food, man. A lot of good food. Barbecue stuff too, man. Briskets, which by the way, were awesome. Plenty to drink. A great time. And the people who were there were mostly, they were all Buffalo Bills fans. A lot of them on Twitter, Bills Mafia. And a lot of them already knew. But anyway, Fenafest it was called because John Fina, Buffalo Bills longtime left tackle, a guy that fans know very well, a very interactive player too, former player, I should say. John is still very much piped into to Bills fans. To the Mafia. John does a show every week, or at least during the season anyway, with Joe Miller, the John Fina show. Again, that's on the Buffalo Rumblings Vidcast Network. They do that live on Monday nights. Anyway, John was there. Very personable. I know John. I've had him on this show a couple times. I've done a live show with him last year at O'Neill's. Great dude, man. Just so personable. But it was a really good time. And got a chance to catch up with a lot of people. Again, most of these... our Bills fans from Twitter, some I know, and it was nice to catch up with them. And I also got a chance to meet some new people, and I'm not going to run off a bunch of names because, again, not everybody who listens to this podcast is even on Twitter. So I've run off some Twitter handles, and you're going to be like, huh? Who the hell are these people that you're talking about? I met some really cool people in person that I've gotten to know over Twitter, you know, over the past couple of years or so. So that was really cool. Joe Miller was there. Joe and I hung out, had a really good conversation. I got a chance to meet Mookie Hawkins, a Bills reporter. He works for WUFO Radio. Cool guy. Again, didn't really have a long conversation with him, but we hooked up. We met. That was pretty cool. And there's one Bills fan. Her name is Sarah Larson. And I wanted to bring her up because, again, if you're on Twitter, you know who I'm talking about. If you're not on Twitter, you may not. Sarah Larson, to me, is a really fascinating person. She went, so last year, and I still want to do a podcast with her on this topic here, but last year, Sarah went to every Buffalo Bills game, all of them, home and away. Now that in itself is pretty impressive, but it's not, I don't think it's completely uncommon. I'm sure there's at least a handful of Bills fans that probably go to all the home games and all the road games. I know Pintle Ron actually does. I know that for sure. And I'm sure there's other fans as well, but there's a difference between Sarah and at least anyone else that I personally know anyway. So Sarah goes to all the Bills home games, which again, you know, you get season tickets for the home games and you go to the road games. That's cool. The difference between Sarah Larson and anyone else that I personally know is that Sarah does not live in Buffalo. Sarah does not live in Western New York. Sarah does not live anywhere near this region. Sarah lives in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, around or somewhere around the Fort Lauderdale area, like 1,400 miles away and shit. So Sarah, pretty much every Bills game, except for when they play actually on the road at Miami, with the exception of that game, every game on the Bills schedule is essentially for Sarah, at least anyway, a road game. So she travels into Buffalo or to Orchard Park 9 times last year, and then she went to every single road game, including the playoffs game in Kansas City as well. That's just fascinating to me. And I'm going to have her on the podcast. Now, again, I got to meet her on Sunday, but we didn't really get a chance to sit down and talk because, man, I really would like to know how you make that work, how you make that work financially, how you make that work with, you know, just the process of planning it, the commitment that it takes. I'm sure there's some sacrifices involved. Really cool stuff. So anyway, I'm going to have Sarah on this podcast, and especially now that I've met her, I'm going to have her on here real soon. And I just think that that's something that fans would be interested in, how somebody can possibly have the opportunity and find a way to go to every single Bills game, home and away, when you actually live in Florida. So anyway, I met her. Sarah's awesome. Kristen Kimmick, president of the Bills Mafia Babes. I know her very well. Good friends. Lots of people I met there. A really good time. I'll tell you too, man. Bills fans are tight. And sometimes, I'm not going to lie, I kind of have made light of it a little bit. Maybe even made fun of it a little bit. How tight these fans are. I mean, like, they do everything together, this group anyway. I'm not saying all Bills fans are all friends with each other, but this particular unit, again, consisting of people pretty much on Twitter, they're pretty amazing, man. And I feel like now that I went to an event like this, I feel like I've been missing the boat. These are cool people. A lot of fun. A lot of fun. And like I said, John Fina, man, he is a... He's quite the character. He's a funny dude. He is very he's very comfortable in his own skin. He's very outgoing. He's extroverted big time. Just a great character, a great person too. And again, very genuine. You know, a lot of these former players, not just with the Bills, but any team, whatever team they would play for, you know, they say nice things about the city and they say nice things about the fans, and that's pretty much where it starts and it ends. But not John, man. John is a genuine person who loves being part of Bills Mafia. And you could just tell, man, the smile. And John, I mean, what NFL player doesn't like attention? John likes the attention. Again, he's very outgoing, very, very funny. You could just tell he's very genuine and he truly enjoys being around. Very gracious with his time and, you know, whether it's signing stuff for people or taking pictures with them, whatever. John Fina is a really cool dude. So anyway, that was a lot of fun. Fina Fest. Good job by Dan Freddy throwing that party. Really good time. All right, so two things, and I want to take a break, and then I want to come back. I want to talk wings. And again, like I said, this will be a condensed episode today. Joe Miller coming on the show tomorrow. Of course, Joe Yurden every Friday, Casual Friday. This weekend's game, the Buffalo Bills defeated the Indianapolis Colts 27-24. I'm not really going to break down anything from this game. I will say this, by the way, Saturday was a really good time. So good to have football back. Preseason is whack. It's boring. It's vanilla. Most of the starters don't play, nor should they play. By the way, I made that clear with Joe Yurden on our show Casual Friday last week. In fact, I ran off 12 or 13 Buffalo Bills where if I'm Brandon Bean or Sean McDermott, they're not going to see a single snap this entire preseason. And I know that's kind of a take that a lot of people don't agree with. Many fans think and some media think that they should at least get some work. Maybe that'll come next week on their second preseason game, which is also in Orchard Park against Denver next Saturday afternoon. I personally don't think any starters should see the field at all. I just feel like the risk far outweighs the reward of these guys getting game reps, man. They're veterans. They know what they got to do. Anyway, at least the guys that I named personally, and that's pretty much what Sean McDermott did for week one. But anyway, my point was this. That aside, whether it's the second string, third string, whatever it may be, it's just good to have NFL preseason football, any kind of football back. It was really cool. Saturday, I had a group of buddies come to the house, and we, you know, had a few cold ones, watched the game. It was a good time. You know, it's good to have football back. Again, I don't care that it's preseason. I don't care that they're backups. And I don't care that a lot of the play calls, for the most part, are pretty vanilla and boring. It's still really enjoyable. But anyway, I watched it with friends on Saturday. And then I went back on Sunday because I DVR'd the game. And like I said, you know, I was having a couple beers. Not going to lie here, man. Went back on Sunday and I rewatched at least most of the game anyway. I'm going to save more detailed in-depth thoughts about whose stock may be up or whose stock I think may be down between this game and camp. I'll save the majority of that for my conversation with Joe Miller on tomorrow's show. But I do got a handful of people. I think that for me, at least personally, and I'm sure a lot of people will agree with this because I don't think I'm going out on any huge limbs here, but there were a handful of players who I think did a lot to really help their stock. I mean, in some cases, really helped their stock with this first preseason game. Whether it's being on the roster bubble and having a great game might help them secure a roster spot, or in some cases, a couple guys who already firmly are on the roster, but you know, this they might push for more playing time based on what we saw against the Colts. I'm going to start with Baylen Specter, the seventh round rookie linebacker. And I'm going to tell you what, too. I got to throw this note in here. So I watched the game, like I said, with some buddies, but also my son. My son, if you've been following this podcast for a while, no, you know my kid. We moved to Florida in part so he could play high school football. He was a linebacker, a very good player, a D2 recruit. Ultimately, didn't end up going to college to play football because of back and hip issues. It just, lots of reasons, and I don't really need to get into that. But anyway, my point was this, is my kid Shane is a student of the game, and especially when it comes to linebackers. Like anytime we watch a Bills game, he is locked in on Milano and Trey Edmonds or whoever else may be playing linebacker for the Bills. And that's what he pays, you know, really close attention to. And so I like to hear his insight and his thoughts. And they're pretty well-constructed as well. But anyway, I'm going to be honest with you, man. Baylen Specter is not a name that I paid much attention to at all during training camp. He is not a name that I really heard a lot from the mainstream media who's been covering practice at camp for the last couple weeks. You got a seventh-round pick. A tough road to make in this roster. But this dude stood out on Saturday. And again, my kid was the one who was pointing out, he's like, this 54, he's like, Dad, this 54, man, who is this guy? Because he was getting off blocks. He kept talking about how he was getting off blocks really quick, really easy, and making plays. And now again, these were second and third string offensive linemen that the Colts had out there, but I don't care. They're still NFL caliber players anyway. And Specter was making them look silly. I think he had like 9 tackles or something. But anyway, he just looked really good. And he was getting off tackles real well. I think this guy, Baylen Specter, really helped himself. I think he may have put himself into legitimate, firm competition to win a linebacker spot, especially if he plays well enough that the Bills decide to keep 6 linebackers. So anyway, you had him, a corner that's starting to generate a lot of buzz. The 6th-round rookie, Christian Benford, I really liked him, man. He looks like a nice, physical, sticky player. And Dane Jackson did not play at all against the Colts, which I think is good news for Dane Jackson because, again, I think Sean McDermott sat pretty much all of his established starters, and Dane Jackson was one of them. Kyer Elam and Christian Benford played a lot. And Kyer Elam has some good moments, but I'm not here to talk about him at all today. I want to talk about this Benford kid. I like him. And, you know, I tweeted about this on Sunday. I don't think he's going to be a starter in week 1, especially if Trey White's back, and I don't even know if he's going to play much if Trey White is back because you have Trey White, you have Dane Jackson, and you have Elam, who I think is going to get every opportunity to win a starting job or at least get a lot of playing time. But based on what I've seen so far, what I've seen in clips from camp, what I've heard and read and seen from media people whose opinions I value in camp, and especially based on what I saw against the Colts on Saturday, I really like this Christian Benford kid, which, by the way, man, you're talking the first two guys I just brought up now, a 7th-round rookie and a 6th-round rookie. This Bills organization is getting it right when it comes to the draft. I think this kid is a lock to make this team because there's no way if they're even thinking about waiving him and hoping he can clear waivers to get on the practice squad based on film that's out there, and especially at their film on Saturday, I don't think that would happen. So I think he's going to make this team for sure. If they don't keep 6 corners, because you're talking Trey, who might start the season on the PUP list. Now, if that happens, this might change, but you got Trey, you got Dane Jackson, you got Elam, and you got Benford, that's 4, and then you got Saron Neal, that's 5. I think Cam Lewis could be in trouble. I think Christian Benford, this camp, and so far in the preseason, if someone's going to lose a roster spot, it may be Cam Lewis. So anyway, I like Benford a lot. I like that new defensive tackle, Tim Settle, the guy who came over from Washington a lot. Now, I was high on him with the signing. He's a player I'm familiar with. He's a player with Washington where if the production wasn't there, it wasn't because he's not a productive player. It's because he was buried on a team. Now, Washington as a whole is not a good team, but man, they have one hell of a defensive line. So the opportunity was lacking for him a little bit. He looked really good. I mean, there was that one pass rush that is flowing around Twitter. I've seen the clip. Quentin Nelson is one of the best, if not maybe the best, offensive guard in the whole NFL. And Settle just bull rushed him, man, dragged him almost into Matt Ryan. really, really good stuff. Tim Settle looked really good. I don't think he's a start. Daquan Jones, who did not play, and I don't know why he didn't play. They didn't specify it was an injury or not, because he wasn't even dressed for the game. So I'm not sure why he didn't play. But anyway, Tim Settle to me is a guy I think you might see Jordan Phillips from a couple years ago when he was with the Bills. Like that kind of value in production in the defensive tackle rotation. I like him a lot. I like him a lot. I really do. Isaiah Hodgins, another one with a really good game. I think it's going to come down to him or Jake Kumerow for that sixth wide receiver roster spot, unless they both play well, or, you know, if they value Kumerow on special teams so much that he's a lock to make this team. Isaiah Hodgins, you know, if he keeps playing the way he did on Saturday, he's going to make a strong case that maybe the Bills need to keep seven receivers instead of six. Yeah, like, what, nine catches or something like that on Saturday? I don't even know what his stats were. Who cares, though? He looked good, man. I liked him a lot. And I remember a couple years ago when he was a sixth-round pick and Gabe Davis was a fourth-round pick. I'll never forget this. Sir Bruce Nolan was one of the guys, and I know there were at least a couple more who said that they actually liked Isaiah more as a sixth-round pick than they didn't like Gabe Davis as a fourth-rounder. Obviously, that didn't turn out to be an accurate take, but my point is Isaiah has an opportunity still to make this team, and maybe early on he's a game-day inactive, and it'll take an injury or so for him to see the field, but I liked what I saw from him. Two more here. The punt god. I mean, Matt Araiza, 82-yard punt. That was just absolutely ridiculous. I can't remember the last time anyone gave a shit when the Bills punted until now. And I know the reaction in my home was the same as the reaction in your homes, or if you were at the game, whatever, in the stadium. That 82-yard punt, holy shit, man. I think they punted from what? Was it 18 or something like that? Yeah, they punted from their 18. Look, man, I've heard a lot about hang time, and that could be an issue. And I'll have to learn to get better at that, things like that. But I'll tell you, man, when you're backed up inside your own 25 and you punt, kick the ball in the damn end zone. I'll take that net 62, and then the opponent starts at the 20-yard line or whatever after a touchback. Who gives a shit? I think that competition, by the way, is over. In fact, if I were the Bills, I would probably maybe release Matt Hawk early. Don't wait to cut down day, final cut down day. Get rid of him now. Give the guy an opportunity to make the team. Because beyond the punt, he had a good day holding, too. In fact, one of the stats was low. And I also like the fact that he held on a game-winning field goal by Tyler Bass. You know, there could have been some pressure there. Maybe the hold wouldn't be good. But the hold was perfect. So far, so good with him. And I think he's done enough already to end the punting competition. And then the last guy. And again, we're going to talk plenty more about a lot of Buffalo Bills, this game, and just the team as a whole. I'll talk plenty more with Joe Miller on tomorrow's show, but I really like Boogie Basham too, who, by the way, I did not know until during the game that he switched his jersey number to 55, Jerry Hughes' old number. That was a great sack. I mean, play of the game probably. Boogie Basham drills the quarterback, fumble, and the rookie Bernard picks it up and runs for a touchdown, man. That was an impact play. I think Boogie Basham has an opportunity to be that third defensive end on this team. I mean, obviously you got Von Miller who didn't play, and you got Gregory Rizzo who didn't play. After that, you got a competition between Boogie Basham and AJ Epenesa and Shaq Lawson, and maybe even Mike Love, who, by the way, had a pretty good game as well. I really like Boogie a lot. I mean, at least I liked his game against the Colts. And look, I don't think he's going to be a guy who's going to come out every week and dominate, but if he could get a certain amount of snaps each week and just make one impact play, something similar to what he did on Saturday, he could be a very useful player for this team. Who, by the way, let's not forget, I mean, Boogie's not like some, he's not some wild card or anything like that. He was a second-round pick last year. So anyway, those are the guys that I really liked against the Colts. And again, on tomorrow's show with Joe, we'll talk a little more in depth about those guys, and we'll talk a little more in depth about some guys who maybe have taken a little bit of a step back when it comes to either making the roster or possibly on the depth chart. Beyond Case Keenum, who, whatever, it's just one preseason game. I'm not going to worry about Case Keenum. He's a good backup. He was terrible against Indy. But look, man, I don't care if it's Case Keenum. I don't care if it's Mitch Trubisky. I don't care if it's Jacoby Brissett. Name me a backup. I don't care who it is. If Josh Allen goes down, that's a wrap anyway. You know what I'm saying? So you want your backup to be able, realistically, if your quarterback has to miss 1 to 3 or 4 games, you want him to be efficient. And I still think Case Keenum can be that. I mean, let's not overreact too much. on one preseason game. But anyway, we'll talk about him a little bit and some other players who I thought their stock might be just a little bit down. And I'll do that with Joe tomorrow. One other quick thing here, and then we'll take a quick break, get back, and talk about this Wings podcast and countdown that we did last week. Pro Football Focus, PFF, just want to throw this out there. They released their top 50 players in the NFL right now. Two Buffalo Bills made that team, or that top 50, I should say. No surprises here either. Stephon Diggs came in 39th, which I'm looking now. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. He was only the 8th receiver. So 8 of the first 38 were actually wide receivers. And Stephon Diggs did make the top 50, 39th overall. But receivers ranked ahead of him, according to Pro Football Focus anyway. Devontae Adams, who was 4th. Cooper Kupp was 13th, which, I mean, that's kind of a little bit of a surprise. I know Devontae Adams is a special, special receiver, but Cooper Kupp literally just had one of, if not the best, wide receiver seasons in the history of the NFL, and he was only ranked 13th. But anyway, Justin Jefferson, the pick, of course, that Minnesota took in the Stephon Diggs trade, he's 17th. You know, I've said it before many times on this podcast, and I truly feel that way. That trade, that Minnesota-Buffalo trade, that was a complete win-win. The Bills did not fleece the Vikings, so let's not act like that's the case. It was a win-win for both teams. Stephon Diggs is the perfect fit for Josh Allen. He's the perfect fit for this offense. He's the perfect fit for this locker room, I feel. And Stephon Diggs has had two of, if not the most productive wide receiver seasons in the history of this entire franchise. So it's a win for the Bills, but it's also a big win for the Vikings. Justin Jefferson is a beast, man. He's an animal. He's a young guy who's still on his rookie contract. Anyway, Justin Jefferson, 17th. Tyreek Hill, Buffalo Bills killer, comes in at 24. Debo Samuel was 28th, and DeAndre Hopkins was 31st. I don't agree with that. I think Stephon Diggs. At this point, you can make a case. Adams and Kupp, I completely agree with. Jefferson, Tyreek, and Debo. I'm like, all right, if you got him ahead of Stephon, I could see that. I don't necessarily agree with all that, but I could certainly see it. Do not agree with DeAndre Hopkins being 31st. And I definitely don't agree with A.J. Brown, although he's a hell of a receiver, but he was 34th. So again, yeah, you're talking 7 receivers ahead of him, and he was 39th. Of course, the big name, Josh Allen, and he came in on the PFF top 50 at number 6, 3rd overall among quarterbacks. The top 5 went Aaron Donald, Trent Williams, Aaron Rodgers, Devontae Adams, and Patrick Mahomes. I think Josh Allen being ranked 6th is fair. I think it's very fair. I agree with the first 3. And look, Aaron Rodgers, you know, he's getting up there, and we'll see what he does without having Devontae Adams this year. I mean, that's obviously a huge loss. But you can't hate on a guy who's won back-to-back MVPs. He's 2-time MVP right now, or back-to-back, I should say, MVP. So he deserves to be 3rd. Devontae Adams or Cooper Kupp, either or, whichever receiver was 4th, I would have been fine with. And Patrick Mahomes is 5th. Again, I'm good with that. I think Mahomes should get the nod based on more overall team success, and he's done it for an extra year more than Josh. But to me, it's like there's no wrong choice. I've said this a million times. If you got Josh Allen as your quarterback, I don't think you want to trade him for anyone, including Mahomes. Or if you already got Mahomes as your quarterback, I don't think you trade him for anyone in the NFL, including Josh Allen. There's just no wrong answer between those two guys. And man, it's going to be fun to see these guys play again this year in the regular season and maybe the playoffs as well. But anyway, that was your PFF top 50, 2 Bills in there. I'm going to take a real quick break. I'm going to come back. And again, I want to kind of elaborate on some of the things from my chicken wing tier list for last week. And again, if you live in Western New York or you come to the area, this is a topic that people actually like to hear about. So be right back after this quick break. Sports fans who like to wager, I'm here to tell you about Odds Trader, the number one site for all your game day bets. If you're looking for a one-stop space on these interwebs to compare odds live up to the minute, look no further than Odds Trader. Why is Odds Trader so valuable to you? Well, for starters, it's the perfect place to compare betting odds and lines from all the major sports books. Why does that matter? Well, it matters because if you're liking a team, you want to throw down some cash on them, You're getting your choice of what's getting you the best odds, the best lines. It's a chance to find the highest payouts if you're betting on the underdogs, or whether you're profiting the most if you're going with the favorites. Odds Trader also allows you to compare all the different sign-up codes and promos from the sports books so that you can get the best deal out there for you. If that's not enough, Odds Trader, the app, also gives you player stats, key game stats, injury reports, projected game day weather, which, by the way, that can be a huge thing to know in certain situations. Odds Trader also has a betting tracker so they can keep records of all your games that you have wagers on and all your betting activity. Simply put, Odds Trader gives you quite literally everything you need to make the most informed bets humanly possible. If you're into betting on sports games, any sport, by the way, make sure you go to oddstrader.com/bluewire. Again, that's oddstrader.com/bluewire. Odds Trader, the number one site for all your game day bets.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
All right, I'm back in. Not going to take up much more time here. So again, last week I did a podcast with Nate Gary, and I dropped my 2022 wings ranking slash tier list. There were 83 spots, and there's six different tiers, and then there's a Mount Rushmore. Quickly, just to review, so I had a Mount Rushmore, then the tiers went Elite Wings, that was tier one, and then we had All-Pro Wings. Those were two. Solid Starter Wings, those were tier three. Depth Chart Wings, those were tier four. Tier five, I'm trying to remember this off the top of my head here. Tier five is Roster Bubble Wings. And then tier six was Waiver Wire Wings. I want to say a couple things too that, again, I didn't really get a chance to talk about much in detail during last week's show. A lot of these places, especially ones that are ranked lower, this needs to be said. First and foremost, I don't like shitting on any business or establishment. The last thing I'm comfortable with is recommending that somebody doesn't go to a place. You know, for the most part, all these places I've been to, whether I've loved their wings or whether, quite frankly, I kind of hated their wings, they've been good businesses. The service has been good. The vibe's been good. The atmosphere has been good. Those wings specifically at that place just aren't good. But that don't mean you should not go there. There's other reasons to go to most of these places beyond just wings. And when I do some of these reviews, I always try to highlight something good about a place. Again, I take no joy or no pride in shitting on any place when it comes to their wings. But that said, you know, I take this at least, I don't take myself dumb. I don't take myself serious at all, okay, when it comes to these wings. Now, that said, I get a lot of people who do ask me for recommendations or you know, recommend either they ask me to recommend somewhere or they'll bring up a place and be like, yo, you have wings here. What did you think? And I'm not going to lie to people because it is kind of my name and my rep on the line. And the last thing I want to do is tell somebody to go have wings somewhere where I thought the wings sucked. You know, hey, these wings are going to be great. Then you go there and they're garbage. And all of a sudden I look like a jerk, you know? So I am honest about it, but I don't take any joy or any pride in shitting on a place. And I always try to highlight other things about a place that I like, even if I do not like their wings. And then the other thing is this. So you hear about wings, you know, on my list, it might be only mid-tier, like tier three, tier four. That means they're only in, they're average here. But that's the whole thing. Wings are average here. A lot of these places are still really good wings. They're just not as good as the ones above them. If you went somewhere else, you know, John Fina, we were having a conversation at Fina Fest at this party I was talking about that I was at on Sunday afternoon because he's in Arizona and I lived in Florida for 5 years. And we talked about O'Neill's because John did a show at O'Neill's with Rock Power Report and Joe Miller. And I asked him how the wings were because I did a show with them last year and I love O'Neill's. But on that night, the wings were just like, meh. And they were good. And but then he brought up the point, listen, anything is good compared to anywhere else, pretty much. Like, okay wings here are actually elite wings in other areas. So again, it's not that a lot of these places are bad necessarily. It's that there's just simply, you know, this is a town that has so many great spots that there's just other places I think that are better. Anyway, I just wanted to highlight a couple of places that I really didn't get a chance to talk about on the podcast. And I did kind of call out Glen Park Tavern, and I'm going to kind of, you know, I'm going to stick by my take. I had them dead last, 83 spots. They are dead last on my list. And I kind of find it fascinating that I don't know why. I mean, they have name recognition and they are on like that Buffalo Wing Trail list. I just, again, great beef on Weck. I looked around at other people's dishes and things. Everything looked good. The bartender was great. The waiter was great. Service was great. The vibe was great. I loved everything about Glen Park Tavern. I've been there twice too. I tried them twice, except the wings, man. The wings are just not any good. They're not good. They are very expensive. They're small. They're bland. And you only get like 8 in a single order. So I just don't get it, man. I don't know how Glen Park Tavern is on a wing trail and how people recommend them, because I just don't like them. And then, like I said, with a lot of these other wing spots that I had on the 6th tier, they're great places for other reasons. We Check's Lounge, lousy wings, but man, great roast beef, great fish fries, great place to drink. Kettles, we talked about them on the podcast. I don't like their wings, did not like them at all, but that's a great place to drink and hang out, a great place to go listen to live music. Pasquale's is another place. I think their wings suck, but I think their pizza's pretty good. I think their pasta is borderline elite, a great place. Lovejoy Pizza, pretty good pizza. Nate talked about that. SE Lounge, another place, you know, shitty wings, but a really fun place in Kaisertown to hang out and have a beer with your friends, man. Play darts. A lot of really cool places on that 6th tier. And then I had that 5th tier, Rosser Bubble Wings. And this is where things had a couple semi-controversial takes, because Good Bar and Dwyer's Irish Pub are two places that are very well known and pretty popular, but I think both of them are severely overrated. And I've been to Good Bar twice. And again, I talked about this with Nate. I know they're popular and I know they're ranked a lot higher because I got a lot of feedback from these lists. And one of the bigger bitches that people had was that Good Bar, I have them way too low. Well, I'll tell you, I've been there twice. And everything about look, wings are wings, man. They're not supposed to be presented like a fancy meal, you know, like a fancy Italian meal or, you know, a steak dinner with all the fixings and stuff on it. But man, it just looked like they just dumped the sauce over it, the blue cheese. And this is not once, this is twice, man. The blue cheese was kind of smothered into the sauce already. And they just, I don't know, it felt like it was a mailed-in effort both time I've had wings at Good Bar. And again, I love Good Bar, man. I grew up on Elmwood Avenue. Literally, my underage ass at 18, 19 years old was sneaking into Good Bar. Good Bar and Kohl's, two of my favorite bars of all time. I love Good Bar. Love being on Elmwood. Love the people watching. But I think those wings are overrated as hell. And ditto for Dwyer's Irish Pub. I just did not like their wings, man. Didn't like them. And I know they're a pretty popular place, though I haven't heard much about them over the last couple of years. But there was a time where they were popular. I just think they're overrated. And again, you get on these places, and a lot of these places don't really tout themselves as having the best wings. They're known for other things. Like the Yelling Goat in Lancaster is not known for wings. That's why I'm only as the 5th tier. But you don't go there primarily to eat wings. And then when I got to the 4th one, this is where tier 4, which is my depth chart wings, we pretty much, Nate and I talked about Anchor Bar, and he thought that I had them ranked actually a little too high. Whereas I explained, I mostly agree, but it was also more about a respect thing. You know, I think Anchor Bar is like the OG of wings. They're the place that people, well, maybe not so much in recent years, has kind of switched a little bit, but for years and years and years, tourists, celebrities, anytime people came into Buffalo and wanted wings, they would always go to Anchor Bar because it was an OG spot. So I kind of gave them a 4th tier depth chart wings, mainly out of respect. Adolph's First Ward Tavern, that's a place that Nate said he had not been to. I didn't talk about them on the podcast. Again, a great neighborhood bar in the First Ward. I absolutely love that place. The wings were crispy, to their credit, but they were, again, they're pretty good, but they're only all right when you compare them to so many other great places in Buffalo. And then a lot of these places, oh, Bella Pizza. Nate and I agreed on that too, by the way, Elite Pizza. I think Bella Pizza is a top three, maybe even top two place for pizza in all of Western New York, any of the locations. But for me, Bella's more of a pizza place than a wing place. They're typical pizza wings. They're all right. And then I had Strikers on the fourth tier, which was the only bowling alley that I think I even bothered at this point to review. But anyway, Rusty Buffalo and Vinny's were both on this list. Two of my favorite drinking bars in all Western New York. In fact, they may be my two favorite drinking bars in all of Western New York. If you see me out more times than not, I'm going to be either at Vinny's or Rusty. Love those places. So that was on the fourth tier. And then I got to the third tier, which was Solid Starter Wings. Again, I talked about a few of these. Prohibition is one. I only mentioned this, but I actually had them ranked a lot lower about maybe a year or so ago. But I've been there more and more recently, and it feels like the wings have been pretty steady, solid. I'm a big fan of Prohibition. I like that place. We talked about Doc Sullivan's. I absolutely hated their wings. I thought they were some of the most overrated wings that I've ever had in my life when I first had them. But I've been back a couple times since then, and they've been considerably better. And that's a very popular drinking spot in South Buffalo. I like the bar, but you got to get there early, man. It gets a little bit young and too rowdy for my ass when it gets to be later at night. G. McCarthy's, a place that a lot of people reached out and said that I have too low. They're good wings, man. They're good. They are good. But I don't really have much to add to that. I just don't think that they're, I think I have them properly ranked. I can't remember what these are numerically. But when you get to this list, you're probably talking on an 83, a little bit higher than middle of the pack. And I think that's kind of what G. McCarthy's is for me. Mooney's on Military, I think, is a sleeper place to get some pretty good wings. They're known for mac and cheese, but their wings are pretty good, which is weird because the Mooney's on West Seneca, same deal. Great mac and cheese, but lousy wings in West Seneca. But Mooney's on Military, those are pretty good. I talked about Snyder Bar and Grill. I went there. It's in Amherst. I went there with Jay Skirsky once. Had a couple cold ones with him. Did a live podcast. And the wings were phenomenal. Phenomenal that night. In fact, I remember, I think I originally had them in my top 10 at one point even. But anyway, I went there, I think once, if not twice, since then. And I just remember that the second time I went there, man, they were not good that time. Wellington Pub, place on Hurdle. Big fan of, I love the Hurdle bars, man. I really do. In the summertime, at least, anyway. I love to get a pint of beer, an order of wings, and just sit my ass on a patio and people watch during a Buffalo summer. Hurdle Avenue, perfect place for that. Big Tree is on here. I like Big Tree. I think that's a little, their reputation and name might be a little bit bigger and better than their wings are, which, by the way, are very expensive. Now, wings have pretty much went up across the board everywhere because of COVID, but there were some places like Glen Park Tavern and like Big Tree where even before COVID, I thought their shit was too pricey. And then the other one, KO Bar and Grill. Nate Gary talked about that. That's a little divey bar on Delaware Avenue before you get to Hurdle. Good wings there, man. So I was glad that Nate agreed with that one. And then you get to tier two, which I said, these are my all-pro wings. Lenova Pizza, absolutely elite barbecue on the pit wings. But the reason why I don't have them quite, you know, in that first tier is because I just think their hotter medium wings are just all right. Kelly's Corner, a good spot. Again, I think they're ever so slightly overrated because a lot of people consider them a top 5 or 10 place for wings. I'm not there with them yet. I think they're good. I actually think their beef on wax sandwich is what they're best known for and a little bit better. I would say the controversial one, actually, before I get to that one, Casey's Black Rock, Nate raved about them wings. He says he might even have them in his top 5. And then we talked about Beltline Brewery, which is near downtown, near Larkin. I did a show there with Lance Lazowski, and man, we did these all-dressed wings. Absolutely phenomenal. A lot of popular places on this second tier. Judy's Lounge Bar and Grill, we didn't talk about them. In Niagara Falls, really solid wings. Mimosas in Hamburg, they're very popular. O'Neill's, right across the street from Highmark Stadium, which, by the way, that place has went up and down for me so much. When their wings are, when they're on, they're as good as anybody, pretty much, in Western New York, man. I love their wings. The problem with them, and this does matter a little bit, is consistency. Now, part of the problem when you have a favorite place, like O'Neill's is a favorite place of mine. I'm there a lot. So I've had wings there 15, 20 times as opposed to a place like, say, Mimosa's, I've only had them like maybe twice. And when you go somewhere 15, 20 times and you get wings that often, you're going to get a couple times where the wings are not up to par that day. They're not as good. I don't know if it's a new cook working or what it may be, but that's my one issue with O'Neill's is I love their wings. And even when they're never bad, but sometimes you can feel them fall off just a little bit anyway. Gabriel's Gate is the one where a lot of people think that that should be even on the Mount Rushmore, certainly a top 5 to 10 place. I don't agree. I think Gabriel's Gate is a pretty good place. Their wings are good, but I don't think they're elite by any means. I think there's at least 15 to 20 places that are better than for sure. So Gabriel's Gate, I only had on my second tier. A lot of people thought they should be on the first. Actually, Nate thought me having them on my second tier was actually ranking them too high. Anyway, and then I had tier one, which was the elite wings. The biggest surprise for at least some people anyway, and I still talk about these wings to this day, is Mulberry in Lackawanna, Bethlehem Park area. Everybody knows Mulberry is known. It's one of the best Italian restaurants in all of Western New York. I did a show there last year with Matt Perino and Nate Gary. And then Joe Miller actually came by and he hung out with us as well. And he had some wings. And we got two types of wings. Regular traditional wings, which I honestly wish I could remember, but I can't remember the name of them. Their name, I want to say they were 716 wings, but whatever. They were their regular traditional wings. And then there were Trey White spicy barbecue wings. The Trey White wings were good. I mean, they were more than good. They were very good, but they weren't elite. They were fine. Okay. But these regular wings, holy shit, man, they were un-freaking believable. And you don't believe me, man, ask Nate, ask Matt, ask Joe. Awesome, awesome wings. The only problem with Mulberry is who goes there to get chicken wings, man? You're going there to have a nice sit-down Italian dinner. But that place is definitely elite. I had Wing Nuts and Sunny Reds. Sunny Reds and Mulberry, their traditional wing is not quite the same, but they're very close. I know they have partners who are involved with both places, so the recipes are pretty much lock and key there. Imperial Pizza, one of my favorite places, because they have like four or five different types of wings that are just really good. So they come at you in layers. I mean, their medium hot is good and really good, but their hot honey barbecue, which is, by the way, is done on the pit, those are amazing. If you want to burn your mouth off, the Smitty wings are amazing. They have Chevetta's medium or hot. Those are really good. They just come at you in waves, man. Really good place. Amherst Ale House, I've done a couple shows there. Love that place. Audubon North, ditto. Dalmatian Hotel and Sports City Pizza Pub. Those are all my elite wings. These are like, so what is it? Like 5 through 12. Because I got my Mount Rushmore. And then tier one is the elite wings, which was 5 through 12. Wing Nuts is in Amherst. That place is becoming a polarizing place. Because a lot of people love Wing Nuts or they hate them. Obviously, I got them ranked this high. So I love them. But I've only had them once. I need to go back there again. I need to verify that these wings were as good as they were for me the first time. So I'm planning on doing a podcast at some point there. Anyway, all right, wrapping up here. My Mount Rushmore wings. These were my top four and the only four that I did in order. Again, when I did my podcast last week with Nate, at this point, I started getting audio difficulties. I could see it coming. So I really put a wrap on it quick and I didn't really talk about these in my reasoning form. So I kind of wanted to fly through that. At number four, Macy's Place Pizzeria. Love that place. It's in Cheektowaga. They got a second location opening up in Kenmore sometime in the fall. I'm not quite sure when. But anyway, their wings are absolutely incredible. Like I said with Imperial, they come at you with mad flavors, man. They got so many flavors. I've done two podcasts there. Once I did one with Marcel Louis Jacques, and I did one as well with Chris Trapasso there before. Both times, man, these wings are just amazing. They're Cajun. Oh, the hot honey barbecue, just like with Imperial, man, this place is amazing. The reason why maybe I have them four instead of ranked even a little bit higher, the only downside about a place like this is it's a small operation. Well, there's two things. Number one, if I'm out to get wings, I'm not, 9 times out of 10, I like to sit down and eat them there. And there's virtually no room at all. There's a small little bar there, bar stool area, I should say, where you can maybe two or three people can fit in. That's it though. Like you go there with a party of four or five people, you're out of luck. You can't, you have to get them picked up or delivered. So I don't like that. And sometimes when even the best wings, when they get delivered, they lose a little bit of that juice, man, a little bit of that flavor when they've been sitting in styrofoam for however many minutes. So that's an issue. And then the other thing is they're so popular now. They've gotten, you know, through word of mouth, and it is pretty much word of mouth. They've gotten so popular. They're so busy that at times the quality might fall off just a little bit. Maybe because, again, you're cooking so many wings and pizza and other stuff that they got going on there at once that it's probably really, really hard for them to be able to keep up. And when you're trying to keep up, sometimes, you know, the quality might suffer ever so slightly. But again, yo, you're on the Mount Rushmore of my wings. Out of 83 places and you're in the Mount Rushmore, there's not much to bitch about. So I got them at 4. Number 3, and this was probably of the 4, the most controversial one, I only have Barbell at 3. I know a lot of people have them at number 1. Look, again, you're on my Mount Rushmore. I love Barbell. The medium are great. The hot are almost too hot for me, by the way. But the medium are amazing. And of course, the Hot Honey Barbecue, which are called the Josh Allen wing now. That's what they're famous for at this point. It is an incredible place. But I will say this much, and I just found this out recently. They open up a second location. And for me, at least anyway, in my personal experience, there is a significant discernible difference between East Aurora and Clarence. You go to the OG, the original East Aurora, it's perfect every time, man. Perfect every time. By the way, the roast beef on weck too. Oh my God. If you haven't been there before, get some wings and get some beef on weck. But that's my point. Go to East Aurora because East Aurora, while it's much smaller, is elite. It's the best. The Clarence location, which I just went to in late June, I'm not going to say the wings weren't good because they were still certainly good. And I got medium and I got the Josh Allen wings. But the quality was definitely lacking compared to East Aurora. And I've had East Aurora many times. The quality and clearance for me was discernible. It was definitely a difference. It was not as good. The wings were crispy, but they could have been a little crispier. And they were a little bit on the small side. I don't know. It's just everything about the flavor, everything about clearance, the location for me lacked a little bit. Now, again, I'm not saying that the clearance location sucks. If I were doing these separately, like Barbell East Aurora and Barbell Clarence wouldn't be on my Mount Rushmore, but it's not like it would be on my third or fourth tier either. It would still be ranked very high. I'm just saying that there was definitely a difference between the two. So my personal recommendation is if you're going to get Barbell, do everything you can to get it in East Aurora. So anyway, they're number 3. Number 2 has been my number 1 for the first 2 years of doing my podcast ranking or my wing rankings. This is my 3rd year doing it. 9-11 Tavern in South Buffalo. Love this place. Well, let me take that back. I don't love this place because you never know when they're open. You never know how long you're going to have to wait to get a table. Because again, I don't like takeout. I like to sit down and eat. Plus, I'm not even sure if you can take out wings there. So there's lots of reasons to not like them. But once those wings come on the table and they hit your mouth, there's not a better wing in Western New York, a traditional wing in Western New York. Which, by the way, you like gimmicks. If you like, Chevetta wings, if you like honey mustard barbecue, if you like all these Cajun stuff, you're shit out of luck when it comes to 9-11. You go to 9-11, you're getting medium or you're getting hot. And that's it. That's a wrap. That's all you're getting. But you know what? When it comes to wings, traditional wings, they're the best. There's not a chicken wing in Buffalo, a regular traditional chicken wing in Buffalo that is better than 9-11 Tavern. And by the way, their fries, absolutely elite as well. Their wings are amazing. Now, why do I not have them number 1 anymore? Well, 2 reasons. Number 1, and again, this is a place that I've been to a handful of times, not just once or twice. Unfortunately, the owner passed away not too long ago, and the daughter took over the business. Now, she has the recipe from her dad, who was the cook there. He didn't just own the place. He was always there, and he always cooked the wings. Still incredible wings, man, but just like maybe a 5% fall off. Nothing crazy. There's still, again, I've had them twice now with the daughter running the place. They are still amazing, amazing wings. They're still number 2 on my list, but they fell off just ever so slightly, which gave a path to my new number 1, which I think was 2 or 3 on my list last year. And that's Elmo's Bar in Amherst. look, man, this play, these wings are, and Nate disagreed. Nate, I can't remember the guy's name, so I apologize. But Nate went on a wing trail with a very popular foodie guy. I can't remember the name, and I'm sincerely apologize for my ignorance on there. But anyway, he said of their stops that he was actually the most disappointed on that specific trip by Elmo's, which again, if you go to these places, you could catch somebody on a bad day. Maybe the best cook is off that day or sick or something's going on or they're understaffed that day. There's lots of reasons why if you go somewhere on, you know, the wrong day, the quality just won't be there. But I'm going to tell you, I've had these wings, I think, 4 times now, and they get better every single time. First of all, they're medium hot, which is the traditional wing that I like to try to base a lot of my judgment on. They're not as good as 9-11 Tavern, or they're not as good as Barbell, but they're still very good. They're regular traditional wing. But those Cajun double dip, hot Cajun double dip, it's my favorite wing in all Western New York. It is elite. It is everything that people say it is and more. Good fries too, by the way. But yeah, those wings, oh my God, they are just freaking absolutely amazing. I went there a handful of weeks ago. In fact, it was the last place I wanted to go back to before deciding who was going to be number one. I knew it was going to be between Barbell, 9-11, and Elmo's. And I went to all three of those places over the span of like 10 or 11 days. And the last time I just went there, man, I was just blown away, man. Those I could have eaten 30 of those wings on that night. I just absolutely loved that place. Anyway, all right, I'm done rambling. But like I said, I wanted to kind of have an explanation, a little more detailed explanation on some of my wing choices that I really didn't get a chance to talk with when I had Nate on the show last week. Anyway, I said this was going to be a condensed episode. I'm completely full of shit because we're almost at 54 minutes right now. But anyway, thank you so much for listening. And if you're on Twitter, make sure you give me a follow at PatMoranTweets. I'm constantly tweeting out podcast updates and promos, upcoming guests, sports takes, pop culture takes, things like that. Twitter is pretty much, social media wise anyway, where I live. And again, thank you so much for listening. It means a lot to me. Truly does. Make sure you check out the episode tomorrow, which, by the way, audio and video tomorrow. But I'll have Joe Miller from Buffalo Rumblings on with me. Talk to you guys then. Take care.